At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Do the hammer.
Everybody's doing it. Hello. Hello, pals. Chris Things Brian here, your host, your friend, your wrestling art guy. And this is Wrestling Art with Chris Things, a little old podcast that I do. We're up to my gosh, like 80 something episodes. How did this happen? I don't know. But we have a very special episode of the show for you today. One that I've been meaning to get together for quite some time, but we finally made it happen with a very busy man. that busy man being Phil Schneider, my partner in crime for Way of the Blade and assorted things. And we're finally doing it, guys. We're going to chop it up and have a good old behind-the-scenes making of Way of the Blade, the AEW edition, chat. We're going to talk all about it. Very much looking forward to that one. I have a lot of mixed kind of feelings about this book and the big release, as I've sort of touched on before in my solo edition, talking about the release of the book, as well as some different other bits and pieces that I've said on here, but I am overall very excited and very proud of the work that we did. If you do want to go back and listen to my solo edition of the book, book release, I spoke a little bit about how when we started this project in mid-2023, I quit my job to do it, basically. I was still in the world of marketing and graphic design back then. I'd had this art thing going, this art practice of mine going. I think I committed to doing it at least in a public sense in like 2016. So I've been working away at it for quite some time and growing as an artist over that time as well. You look back at some of that early stuff that I did and I'm like, oh, okay, so that was a jumping off point for me to be like, hey, could I maybe be an artist / illustrator full time? And that's always what I wanted to do and wanted to be. But it's a scary thing to do, leaving behind the comfort and reliability of that weekly check working for someone else for the complete unknown. And this book, I thought, was a sign that, all right, I had the first Way of the Blade that Phil and I and Jonathan Snowden of Hybrid Shoot all did together, and I think that was really cool. I'm so proud of that first book, and I think the success of that and kind of the underground success of it really set up so much of the stuff that I've been able to have the privilege of doing thereafter. When I heard that we were doing it again and this was going to be the AEW edition of the book, I was like, okay, man, like, let's jump in with both feet and just give this a go, you know. In a lot of ways, I look back on that timing of doing that, and I kind of felt like the universe was telling me that it was time to give this a go. There's other things that I look at, and I'm just like, my God, how at that point did you think that you were going to be able to get a full-time income out of this thing where you were at? But you learn and you grow, and that's the whole thing. And you know, you have to take chances, and you have to put yourself in a terrifying position of being not sure how you're going to pay your rent to really kind of be in this in all the ways. So I think it was good. I'm glad that I did it. And yeah, it marked a very special kind of point in my life of trying to be full time at doing this thing. So yeah, a lot of weird feelings about the book release. It obviously took quite a while, and you know, there's a lot of things involved and a lot of different people that were involved as well. But yeah, like it finally being out there for people to pick up. Yeah, I'm super proud of it. You know, it's been super amazing to see all of the other people you know, receive it and you know, be able to hold it in their hands and read it. I've you know, heard a bunch of people say they've already finished it, and they were really stoked. And I think that Phil did an amazing job with the writing of the book. You know, and those interviews with the various AEW talent. You know, we'll talk a little bit about that in the interview today. But some really good stuff in there. And you know, I guess if I look at it now, look at sort of my part of that, of you know, doing the illustrations, doing the cover art, doing a portrait of Tony Khan holding a bloody pencil as the bloody Booker man, I guess that is all this thing. To doing, it was actually a really nice group portrait that they got me to do of all three of us, of Jonathan and Phil and myself. That's in that book as well. And then yeah, obviously all of the actual internal illustrations itself. Like I think it's like 60 or 70 illustrations all up. This time we took a different approach where it's a bit less matches than the full 100 of the previous book, but you know, kind of Phil got to do a bunch of interviews and maybe get a bit more out of those individual matches than it was afforded the space to do so for the first book. So I think that was super cool. But yeah, so I got to do at least two illustrations per match in the way that we did it. So that was really cool and added a little bit of storytelling ability, I guess, for the way that I did illustrations. So from like an artist perspective, when I did that first book, the first Way of the Blade, it was so hard on so many occasions trying to just pick that one moment that was going to be reflective of the entire match. And of course, I then, you know, still kind of have that challenge now with my Match of the Week illustration series. And it's kind of a fun challenge, you know, if I'm being real. But it was extra cool to kind of get to do two, because you get to sort of give me a little bit of creative with how I kind of can pick those two moments. And yeah, so I was pretty stoked on that. There's a lot of, you know, matches in that book that I really, really love. You know, for this episode, as I was mentioning to Phil in the interview to come, I think that trying to pick a favorite match of the lot was a very hard task. You know, off the top of my head, you know, some of the real favorites in there got to be that, like, the double dog collar tag match between the Briscoes and FTR. That one holds a very special place in my heart, obviously, you know, with the passing of Jay and everything, but also because, like, the first of that trilogy in Dallas, I actually got to be there in person, And that was such a special match to get to appreciate in person. So then getting to illustrate for the book the final match of that trilogy was a very special thing, and one that I took very seriously. So I hope I did that one justice. But, you know, I'm very proud of those illustrations. You know, to other ones like the Punk and Kingston, I think, is maybe my favourite matches in the entire thing. And that was another one where I just really did my best to try to capture the emotion of that. More on that in the chat with Phil. And, you know, other ones that were just like little surprise, you know, amazing matches were, you know, stuff like Mox versus Yuta or Danielson versus Garcia or those early Danielson versus Hangman matches I adored. The first Hangman Page versus Moxley Texas Death Match I absolutely adored. And, you know, look back on those illustrations and just hyper violent. You know, I might be limited how much I can post those ones on social media, to be honest. You know, the two being, you know, Hangman choking Mox over the top rope, and then the triangle where he's stabbing him with that fork. Incredible intense moment. To ones like, you know, I think now another of my real favourites is that Jericho Nick Gage match with the light tubes, with the pizza cutter, with that incredible Domino's ad that came in after it. Oh my gosh. This whole thing really it was a labour of love. And something that I feel so lucky to have been involved in. Before we get into the chat with Phil, just want to say a massive thank you to Phil, to Jonathan Snowden, to Hybrid Shoot, to everyone for allowing me to be a part of this thing. And I'm super stoked to continue this partnership with Phil, and hopefully with Hybrid Shoot too, to, you know, continue this this weird magic that we've got going on together. Makes me so happy to get to do this stuff, guys. And for this book, I think I look at it and it's celebrating those early years of AEW that I personally was very passionate about. And there was a lot of love that I had for the company in those years and the product that we're putting out. So to get to celebrate that period in this book is a very cool thing for me. So, I'm stoked on it, and I do think the book, now that it's released, there is a bit of a kind of like people sleeping on it kind of nature. Didn't quite get the massive buzz on release that the previous one might have. So I guess that's why I'm doing this kind of stuff. I just want to spread the word, let people know. Sort of, I don't know. I think we did a pretty cool thing here. So if you'll do want to support, that'd be greatly appreciated. The book is available right now on Amazon worldwide, I believe, both in paperback form as well as Kindle. If you want to check it out, please do. If you're a fan of those early years of AEW, you know, like myself, and passionate about great bloody wrestling matches, I think you'll dig it. And those interviews and Phil's writing is just top-notch. So proud to be in part of something that Phil is writing in that sense. Check it out. And if you've already got it, please feel welcome to write a review, or even just swing me a message and tell me what your favourite matches were. or favourite illustrations in the book were as well. Alright, I think that's about it. That's enough of waffling on here. Let's jump into our interview with Phil. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I am very excited to have a gentleman that I always love chomping it up with, Phil Schneider, back on the show. Welcome to the podcast, Phil.
Always glad to do it, Chris. Always love chatting with you.
Oh, likewise. I definitely enjoy the nerding out about all the things with you whenever I get the chance. And today is a very special one. I thought we could finally do an official Way of the Blade AEW edition chat about the book, about the process, about, you know, when we started this thing to it finally now being out and available for people to buy. But it's I have so many emotions. I don't even know where to start. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, it felt like we were on the 5-yard line for a long time with this book. And so I was so happy it finally is out. People can see it. We, you know, spent a fair amount of time working on this. Probably more work on this one than I did on the first one, just because, you know, for me, it was also like all of these interviews and sort of putting all that part of it into a readable format in a way that, you know, the other one I just had to write. So I didn't have to do any extra anything but just put pencil to paper or, you know, fingers on keyboards and you know, bang out the writing. And here it was, do the writing in an edition, you know, or, you know, a lot of logistical things about getting all these interviews together and you know, transcribing them and making them sort of flow as the thing for people to read. So a lot of work into this one, and I was really happy to see it out, and I was, you know, really happy how it turned out. And I wasn't always 100% sure that this was gonna come out as well as the first one, but I was pretty happy with the way it was. You know, it was like focusing on one thing like that, right? I think one of the great things about the first book was it's sort of breadth. You know what I mean? And there's it's lots
insane
of that
variety.
Right. And here it's, you know, it's really is this one promotion over, you know, half a dozen years. And, you know, you're often writing about the same people more than I was, you know, in the first book. You know, it helped that I had done some of this stuff writing for The Ringer already. So I was able to, you know, I had an outline that I could then, you know, adjust accordingly. So that was a little helpful, but mostly this one was a little trickier. So I'm happy with the way it turned out. Yeah, I think I'm probably a better writer now than I was when we did the first book, because I have put it, I had, you know, that year plus at The Ringer where I was writing, you know, every week and, you know, really, you know, professionally, as opposed to just on Segunda Caída, where, you know, I wasn't necessarily that, you know, Segunda Caída, I'll just whip up some stuff about Fujiwara and throw it out there. I wasn't necessarily that word, like, you know, like editing and, you know, so I think I'm probably a better writer now than I was when we did the first book. So I think, especially a couple of them, I'm like, ah, this is actually, it's actually pretty good. I'm usually a relatively harsh critic of my own writing.
It comes with the territory. It's crazy to think how long ago the original Way of the Blade was now, and like when we actually sort of started that project. That's like just feels bizarre when I look at like the date of you know, the original files that I have on my computer for like the illustrations from that thing, and then fast forward to this one, and I think we officially started, or at least I started this project, I think like mid 2023, May of 2023, maybe.
Yeah.
Which is pretty wild. And yeah, I it's funny you say about how you know, you look at it and you know, with a bit more of the experience, you kind of feel like your writing's better. Like in some ways, I look at this for myself as well with like the illustrations, and I feel like I kind of you know, from the process of the first book, had a bit more of a way of doing things, a bit more of a process kind of down. And then, yeah, I feel like some of the illustrations I did for this one, I'm probably even more, you know, like proud of than the original ones. And I guess it's all sort of just like, you know, growing as an artist, growing as a writer, you know, that experience is kind of a big part of things.
I mean, you do it enough, you get better at it, right? You know, like,
yeah.
And especially, you know, I mean, I wrote forever, for a long, long time, but, you know, the Death Valley Driver, Segunda Caída, those things are, they're a lot more sort of, I mean, I've spent a lot of time on the stuff I do for those things, but it just like, it's not as like, it's you know, more of like fun amateur work in a way that, you know, a book's professional, the writing I've been doing, you know, for The Ringer, the writing I do for Yahoo now, that's like, you know, that's actual, people are paying me to do it. So like, you have like this responsibility. It's like, this can't be, I can't, you know, I felt fine half-assing a Black Terror review or two for Segunda Caída, but I gotta put my foot in this. I can't just whip off a couple jokes and a couple observations and hit post, you know, with something where somebody's actually, you know, their American dollars are coming into my bank account for. So, you know, or a book, which is people are paying for, right? Like people, you know, pay $20 to see this, and you want the stuff you do to be worth the money that they're spending and the time they're spending reading it. So it puts a little more pressure, I think, on your shoulders than for doing it as kind of a fun thing that, you know, if 10 people read or 100 people read or 1,000 people read, or whatever, right?
I guess the tricky part is, like, I think part of the magic of it is sort of like the playful nature of it, and kind of like that same kind of like playful vibe that you would have from the kind of stuff from like Segunda Caída or whatever. It's like, I feel like it's a big thing to sometimes like not overthink and over perfect and keep that kind of like raw enthusiasm about things sometimes.
Yeah, you know, I try to have a voice, and you try to keep that relatively consistent through all the stuff you write. Like, you want it to feel like you and you know, and I mean, I don't know, I'm not a lot of like the thing, a lot of wrestling reviewing, there's some people that do it good, but a lot of times you read it, it's just like, you're just telling me this guy did an arm drag and then he did a drop. I mean, what would you find me a through line? Like, you want to find a through line of something interesting to say about this as opposed to just listing off 10 cool moves. And you know, when you're doing something like this, you got to try to find a through line. You got to find something that, what makes this memorable? What makes this interesting? What about this match was, makes it more interesting than, you know, the, you know, something like AEW, right? They're putting on 4 hours of TV a week, plus pay-per-views, plus ROH. I mean, they're putting out so much stuff. You know, if you're going to pick something out and say, this is special, you want to have something about it that's special more than just, this guy bled a lot, or this guy took a stupid bump on his head. So you try to think about that when you're writing. All right, well, what makes this actually worth highlighting?
Yeah, it's interesting you say through line, because I was thinking the same thing. You know, when I was kind of like preparing for our chat and thinking about kind of the grouping of matches that we have here in this book. And it's funny you say like about the, you know, maybe not as much crazy variety in some ways as the previous book. But, you know, for it being all in one company, like I looked at the sort of weird combination of matches that we ended up having here. You know, as I was really kind of going through it. And I think there is still like an amazing level of variety in this one, in the AEW edition of the book. I think that says something kind of like really good about AEW, that there is so many different types of matches. And even if we're just talking about the bloody matches, so many different types of like great bloody matches. You know, I found it really interesting going through it, kind of like, And I think Jonathan, you know, went into it a little bit in his introduction kind of thing for the book, about kind of like, you've got the great physical matches that happen to, you know, involve blood, and then you have the crazy hardcore matches that are like all about the spectacle and the blood, and then you have just like great matches that just happen to involve blood. Like it's sort of a really interesting mix, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and they've done, you know, just some really crazy stuff, you know, over the years, that, like, you know, had where it is like, wow, you didn't expect this was ever going to be on, you know, a cable network, television show, right? You're going to have, you know, spike bats and glass and, you know, pizza cutters. It's like, you know, the stuff that you didn't think had really been, you know, the edges of the wrestling world. And now it's like, wow, they really, you know, I was watching it again. I was like, yeah. They slammed that guy through a windshield, didn't they? They were really squirting around in this match, kind of. Which, you know, I'm not. I mean, it's funny because I've written two books about bloody wrestling, and you know, working on a third one. But I'm not like a giant deathmatch guy. Like, you know what I mean? I've liked some of that stuff, and the best stuff I've, you know, doing. And we're doing, you know, the deathmatch canon right now on Way the Blade Pod. We sort of took the summer off, but we're starting that up again next week, and so I'm watching a lot of this stuff. But it's like, you know, we did our CZW episode, I didn't really watch any of those matches, and some of them I were watching, I was like, I know, fucky JR, you love this shit, this match kind of sucks. Like, you know, like, so it's funny that, you know, I don't know, it's like the stuff that I really, the real stuff that I really love there, I don't know, is the craziest stuff, you know, something like Brian Danielson, Roosh, you know, that my kind of shit, that more than, you know, one of these really, really insane, you know, weapons and stuff kind of matches. Like, I really like, you know, that kind of thing, because I'm in my heart an 80s NWA guy, right? You know, Dusty Rhodes wasn't necessarily getting hit with light tubes. You know what I mean? Like, as much like sometimes, you know, but that's the thing that, you know, that's the kind of wrestling that, you know, really lights up the pleasure centers of my brain even still,
right? Or like the Sangre Chicana MS1 kind of yeah, stuff. That's like, that's cool. What reminded me of that one big time.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, I one of the great things about being a wrestling fan is there's so much stuff that even now, after writing about this and being, you know, the very, like, you know, I've been a guy who watches tapes, has been watching tapes and trading stuff and looking for wrestling all over the world. Been doing that since, you know, the late 90s, right? So, you know, almost 30 years of not just watching stuff on TV, but actively tape trading and things like that. You still find things that, you know, you didn't know were out there that are still. I watched, we were talking about Sanjay Khan and I just watched a Sangre Chicana Latin, Sanjay Khan heavy metal street fight.
I saw people talking about this one.
Like an obscure, like, oh, this was a handout. This is one of the big shows, but, you know, like 97 AAA was, I wasn't checking for that as much. And, you know, it escaped me, you know, and obviously Sangre Chicana is in my favorite match of all time. There's a guy I like, and I watched that, you know, 2-3 days ago. It was Buddy Elliott, I guess, you know, stumbled across it on YouTube and checked it out. It's like, holy shit, this is really great. I'm like, oh, it does look pretty great from the GIF you showed me. And then I watch it, really fucking great. I mean, really incredible stuff. Great stuff. Go watch it when you get a chance. It's on YouTube. You know, we're 17 minutes long, and it's like, I don't, it's not as good as Sangre Chicana MS1 or Chicana Paraguayo, but it's not that much worse than them. Like, it's in the same, you know, like, if those are just, if, like, that's the A++ tier of Lucha Brawls, this is probably in the A tier of Lucha Brawls. So it's not as good as the absolute 7 best ones ever, but it's probably somewhere in the teens. And I didn't know even know that.
I'm sold completely on just getting to see old man Sangre Chicana.
I don't think at this point. I think he lived a hard life. I think he's probably just, for a luchador, it wasn't that old. I think he was probably in his 40s, right? Like, it's not like Blue Panther's out here putting on match of the years at 64 years old.
Incredible, man. Yeah, shout out to Elliot's Wrestling. Like, I love that Twitter account so much. So much goodness that I've gotten onto with his lists and everything, dude. So good.
Yeah, but I mean, it's one of the cool things about, you know, about being a fan is, like, you're not running out of, you know, absolute perfect classic. I still haven't seen them all. And, you know, you're still getting still great stuff happening every week. Little, maybe not as many great things. I mean, I don't, you know, it's so kind of funny that you have so much access to everything now. It's like, man, why wasn't there an IWTV around in 1987 in where instead of live streaming, you know, ICW hardcore shows that weren't live streaming, you know, Monday night Mid-South Coliseum cards.
Oh my gosh, I wish.
How incredible would this have been if New Japan World was around when New Japan was awesome, and you could just watch like, you know, like 1991 New Japan as opposed to 2025 every single episode of every evil match from 2025 New Japan, if you could watch every Shinya Hashimoto match in 1993
or even if I could just get every bit of Kazunari Murakami from that early 2000s run. I feel like the footage of that super spotty.
Yeah, exactly. So it's so you know, but still, you know, find this cool shit every day. You know, I mean, I you know, I've been watching a little more ROH lately because it feels like ROH got a little Dean pilled lately because they got, you know, they had my guy Adam Priest had to, you know, a title match against Bandido. They had Virus, Shelwa. They have Shelwa, Lee Moriarty tonight. Was trying to book Shelwa Lee Moriarty on a Deed show, and Tony fucking snaked it and put it on. It's gonna put it on Death their ROH pay per view before I can get on a Deed show. You know, so it's there's still fun stuff, man. It's still you know, there's still lots of things we got to show coming up in less than a month. It's not 100% put together yet, but I. there'll be some shit on going on in Philly. Do I know what it is yet? I don't. It's going to be cool, probably.
Hey, that's the magic of it, right? I can't keep up with half the stuff that I want to watch. And then, you know, when you get down these rabbit holes of being like, oh, man, I just want to watch a lot of Memphis, or I just want to, like, get into whatever the heck it is, or, you know, whatever Vault is releasing or whatever. It's like, it's a good time. And there's no lack of great stuff to watch. But, like, back to the book, I was very interested to work out. So I got your list, you know, when we were working on this together. I got our matches. We didn't have as many matches as the original Way of the Blade, but I think that lent itself to some cool things for this one. You know, I got to do, you know, kind of more illustrations for each match and tell a little bit more of a story with the combination of them. You know, you got to like do all those amazing interviews, and you know, then lead on to some other stuff of, you know, these different other kind of rabbit holes that we're talking about with different dog collar matches and shit. But can I ask, like, when you were refining this list, were there any like really tough calls that you had to kind of make in terms of the ones you included?
Not really. I mean, it had blood, and I thought it was good. It was kind of going to make it in the thing because this wasn't 100. I mean, I didn't want to repeat matches.
Yes, right.
So, you know, I didn't want to have, like, the same matchup a bunch of times. So, like, I could have written about all three Briscoe FTR matches, for example. But I was just like, it didn't feel to me like I'd have enough different things to say about the three of them. And I felt like I could say what I wanted to say about the dog collar match and have that sort of stand as a representative of all of them. Similarly, yeah. I mean, I don't think we repeated any matches in Way of the Blade, did we?
Maybe. I think we had two of the Piper Valentine.
Oh, yeah, we had two Piper. That's
fine. I think. But I mean, yes. as we should,
as we should, have. Yeah. I think there was, outside of that though, I didn't think there was anything that I was like that I just cut. Obviously, you know, we kept the shit kept happening when we were kind of done with the book, right? So yeah. You know, we kept on adding stuff at the end. Like there was three matches that got added in after I had basically been done, and then it was like, well, then you know the swerve. Hangman Page happened, and then the match at Wembley happened, and Tony Khan really wanted that in the book because he was, you know, so proud about getting to do this crazy hardcore match in the Royal Box at Wembley Stadium, and he was like, "Oh, you got to write about that." I'm like, "All right, no problem." So stuff kept getting added. Obviously, you know, if we'd put the book off for another month, you know, then we would have had another, you know, put it off for another 6 months. We would have had another, you know, been able to write about Tony Storm, Mariah May, or I got to see, you know, that really, really great Mark Briscoe Ricochet stretcher match. I was at that, you know, at that show. I got to see that live, right? So that was
nice.
Pretty great, because that was, you know, obviously we did Dean 2 right before Death Before Dishonor, so we all were at Death Before Dishonor the next night. So I was got to see that show live. AEW pay-per-views are long. You ever been to an AEW pay-per-view?
I've been to some of the TV tapings, but I've never been to one of the pay-per-views.
You're there for a minute. You're there for a while. It's like, you're like, oh man, this is really really taking. So especially because we were coming off like the adrenaline high of doing the show the night before, and now we're just like, oh man, it's still five more matches to go, huh? Okay.
I was there in person.
We'll get a Diet Coke from catering. This is going to take. I'm going to get some energy for this show.
That I was there in person for one of the matches that's in this book. I was there in Boston for the Yuta versus Moxley match where Yuta just bleeds a ton. That was a fantastic match in person and a really great venue. I really love that previous venue they used to run in Boston before they moved on to some of the other ones. It was like the university kind of building. It had really, really cool vibes. Great experience.
I remember I was on a plane, I think, when that match happened. I don't know where I was going. I don't remember what exactly it was. But I was on a plane. And like when I got off a plane, it was like, you know, 30 DMs and fucking messages on Twitter saying, oh shit, there's a Way of the Blade, next Way of the Blade for sure happened. Yo, man, Will Phil, did you see this crazy shit? So I remember that much. I remember my phone was blowing up, you know, cause like on a plane for 3 hours. The Moxley's interview about that match was really cool, where he basically talked about how this all kind of came together almost by happenstance, right? Like it didn't. You know, something, I think it was that the night, maybe that was the night he was supposed to wrestle Brian Kendrick, I think was the one.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
And he talked about how, you know, Brian Kendrick got himself canceled moments before the show. So this was really thrown together and kind of, you know, made Yuta's career basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he talked about how kind of he wanted to, you know, I think it's some quote about like, you know, can you put 10 pounds of shit in a 10-pound bag, so I'm just got to put an extra 5 pounds of shit in just to do it. I was thinking that's kind of his idea about that match. I mean, Moxley is, you know, right, as the quotes I got from Moxley, incredible. I mean, just say, just the way he just, you know, he has such an interesting way of thinking about wrestling. And, you know, was really, really, you know, candid and talked a lot about it. I got a lot of that one. You know, some of the interviews were a little more, you know, I liked all of them, but some of them were a little less. You didn't get as deep into it as, you know, Lance Archer didn't go as deep into his interview as Moxley did. But Moxley and Danielson and Eddie were like the three were just like, they really dove down and talked a lot about these things and got a lot of really great quotes.
So good. That was everything I was hoping for out of, you know, when I heard there was going to be these interviews, and I was just like, oh man, I really hope they get into the, you know, the nuts and bolts.
I mean, I think I got a lot better at interviewing people over the course of doing this too, in a way that isn't something that I had done that much previously. I started doing it a little bit for The Ringer. And you know, some of the later stuff I wrote for them after I had the weekly column were kind of more profile things with lots of interviews. I think that was a course of another like skill I was able to develop. And I've done a lot of the things I've been doing for Yahoo have been these kind of, you know, interview profile stuff. They're not as interested in match listicles. So it's like, okay, instead I'm going to interview a bunch of people about Gypsy Joe or interview a bunch of people or interview Paul. I did this thing. Most recent thing I interviewed Paul Heyman about an ECW What If and got to talk. Oh, you know, so I've gotten better. I've gotten more. And we're in the early stages of working on the third book. You know, I got a list. I've started some writing and given you a list to start thinking about, right. I don't know if you've done any drawing, but you got a list to start.
Yes.
And one of the things I want to do is see if there's some interviews I can do for this, you know, the Way of the Blade 1 style with the interview portion of it that we had with. So it's going to require me to like track down some people. I'm not going to pigeonhole some people at Dean 3 or something like that. Bring a recorder app on my phone or something like that. I'm just going to snatch somebody off the catering and talk to them for a second.
Heck yeah.
I'm thinking about doing some of that too. So I'm kind of, one of the things I've been doing when I'm putting the list together is like, well, I kind of want to, who might I be able to talk to about some of the stuff?
Man, I hope so. That would be, I mean, I guess it's funny, like we're getting to a stage where a lot of these dudes are getting older and we're seeing guys like, you know, passing away like left and right. So it's like, yeah, I guess as much as we can, you know, try to get these stories out of people while they're still around. I was super, like when I was looking through the list for myself, there were some matches that stood out to me that when I watched them initially, you know, I was like, oh, that was awesome. But then it kind of quickly, you know, disappeared from my brain. And then when I was going through them for the book, they really like kind of on rewatch, they got so much better. And I was like, man, I really didn't notice at the time how completely awesome that Danielson versus Garcia match was, for example. You know, that like when I rewatched it, I was like, holy shit, this thing is actually even better now watching it like a year or two down the road. Like, or another like weird little one that I absolutely adored on rewatch far more than initially was the Evil Uno versus Moxley match. These weird little kind of surprise matches, I really, really got a kick out of.
Evil Uno was the first person I interviewed for the book.
Yeah.
I think my first interview was Evil Uno. Like when they said, well, here we can get you Evil Uno. And I was like, shit, this isn't going to work. The best you guys can get is Evil Uno. But I'll definitely talk to Evil Uno. Let's set it up. I was like, oh, this is going to be the best you guys are going to be able to get me. Shade on my guy Evil Uno, who I thought had some really cool quotes about how he always, this is like the first time he ever bled in a match and how he always really wanted to do it. And, you know, it was a cool, really cool conversation. But I remember being a little concerned when that was those were the names they brought me. It was like the first three were like Evil Uno, Lance Archer, and the Bunny, who I thought I got all the quotes out of. But I was like, this is not going to be a successful if I'm going to get access to that tier of a superstar, right? It's like I can get at least some guys with, you know, like, my writing plus here's what the Bunny thought of her match. a cool interview with the Bunny. Really talking about a big fan of horror movies she was and how excited she was to have in this kind of horror movie wrestling match.
Oh man, yeah, the Uno match was actually super fun to illustrate. Because, yeah, I think when I was really going through it, it was a really great, like, close-up shot of that, you know, incredible blade job that Uno did, and that the, you know, torn mask and the blood, like, bloody eye kind of, like, bit. It was just a really interesting, I think that was when Moxley had him in the bulldog choke. And then the pile driver was just such a good pile driver. I was super excited to at least get one pile driver in the book with the illustrations. But no, the reason I brought that up was because I was interested if there was anything that stood out to you now looking back on it, that, you know, when you re-went through these matches, when you're re-watching it to you know, do the write-ups for them, any that stood out that, you know, didn't necessarily stand out to you as much when you originally watched them, but like when you re-went through them, you're like, this is actually really, really something.
Okay. You know, I don't know if it's exactly the answer to that question, but Jericho Omega, which is not a fill match on paper, particularly. Mm. That's not my particular flavor of chips, right? Those two guys in general, and them matching up with each other is not something I necessarily, not something that excited me at. And I don't even know that I necessarily even watched it. This is from like the first paper. I don't even know if that I watched when it first happened. I might have, probably. It's before I was writing for The Ringer, so I wouldn't have had a responsibility to watch it. And, you know, I definitely watched the Dustin match, right? But it was like, did I watch Kenny Omega? Is that like a guy who, not my kind of guy? And Jericho was a bit, but then when I watched it for this, I was like, yeah, actually pretty goddamn good. This is, Jericho's really, these guys are really potatoing the shit out of each other. Really, I wasn't really expecting this kind of like, these two guys to wrestle like a Carisu match from FMW, but that's what it kind of felt like.
Yeah.
Elbow hit him in the neck and the side of his neck in a way, and his face is turning bruised up and purple. And they really, Jericho's a guy. It's funny. Like, I mean, I think most people are kind of sick of him at this point, and he's been in AEW since the beginning. And, you know, he obviously, there's a lot of, you know, your overall Jericho experience is something that people aren't super into. But it's like the Jericho in this book, it's pretty great matches and like in interesting. Oh, yeah. Unexpected ways where you kind of in some ways I came up a much bigger Jericho fan after putting together this book than I was before or thought I would be, because I'm part of me's like going, well shit man, Jericho doesn't need to let fucking Nick Gage cut him with a pizza cutter, right? Like at this point, he's like that kind of stuff. It's like he doesn't need to do that. Like he, you know, he went in there and had like a straight up CZW Smyrna Delaware King of the, you know, Tournament of death match with fucking Nick Gage in a way that, why would he have to sell that much and take that much punishment from a guy who showed up once on TV and will never never showed up again and probably will
I
never
love that up. That happened.
Or the Ishii match that's in the book.
I was about to say, like, blading the chest. Like, my
you're gonna have this match again. You're gonna bring in Ishii and then this retcon a story about how you guys are feuding over like some shit that happened in the War Dojo, that he was like Jericho the dick to Ishii when Ishii was his young boy at the War Dojo. That's probably not true, but like they're gonna do like this one-off TV match based on wrestle and romance backstory feuds from 20 years ago, and then Jericho's gonna let Ishii like, you know, like beat the living shit out of him. I mean, like as bad a beating as I've ever seen Ishii lay on somebody, even like with the matches against Shibata. You know, he's like just absolutely pulverizing Jericho's chest. He's bleeding all over the place. And part of you goes, man, you know, this guy could have skated. You know what I mean? Like, but still he would, you know, he'd show up and he'd do this. And I think the Eddie Kingston barbed wire match was kind of a failure as a match. He didn't make it in the book as much as, you know, Eddie's my guy, but you know, he still did that match. He still took a bunch of bumps into barbed wire. And it's like, he's like in his 50s and a big star and doesn't need to do that. Could easily have spent this time in the WWE just, you know,
posted,
making faces at Roman Reigns, you know, like without any problem. And yes, completely coasting and definitely did not, has not. And part of, and while it's like not a guy who I am excited to see return to weekly television when he does, you know, kind of came out of this going at Jericho. He's got his moments, man. There's some moments.
Yeah,
sure.
100%. I think watching back some of those earlier matches, especially kind of like it, it was interesting because I really love that stuff. And you know, the whole thing of AEW as a company and coming in and, you know, being the first big time company to like challenge WWE. You know, there's a lot of reasons why I was feeling like I was fully in on the ground floor and wanting AEW to succeed. So I was watching every one of those early shows, like every little bit and piece of it. And then, you know, I don't have time to watch as much of it anymore these days. But at that point, I was a huge fan. So going back and watching this, it was interesting because I had a lot of kind of nostalgia for it, which is kind of weird having nostalgia for something that isn't that old. But especially going back and yeah, watching some of those Jericho matches, I was just like, man, I feel like people kind of forget how great this was. And just how much he was, like you're saying, going a lot harder than he even needed to, especially that Omega match, where it's just like that bit where the spinning, whatchamacallit.
Back elbow gimmick,
man, that was brutal and wonderful.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting. AEW, I kind of, It's like for a while they were like a Danielson, Punk, Eddie Kingston, like these, like, you know, my guys from IWA Mid-South and Ring of Honor 2005, tail of end of their career when it was that promotion. That was a promotion I was really, really into. You know, and then you have like guys like Rush and things like that. And I, you know, before that, when they were primarily Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, you know, that era of New Japan guys promotion, I was less into it. And now it's like they're kind of really like an Osprey, you know. So now, I mean, they're not like, they're not that group of guys that I was really, that period I was really into it. They passed on and they're doing different things now. So I, you know, it's like interesting. I don't, I think I like it more now than I did when it started, but less than I did like 3 years ago. But there's still a lot of things. But I think it's changing a lot. And like I said, you know, the edges, I'm really enjoying a lot of things they're doing on the edges, right? Like, I'm really into a lot of the stuff they're doing at ROH. And, you know, every once in a while, they'll throw in some crazy, you know, Lucha Six Man and, you know, on Dynamite or something like that. Or you know, they'll let Dustin Rhodes kick a bunch of tacks into Kyle Fletcher's deck. And, you know, then I'm like, okay, I mean, you got me. I'm in.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So good. Yeah, I think that period you're talking about, like I was thinking of like some of my favorite matches. That was like one thing I wanted to talk to you about, like, you know, getting towards the end today, like our sort of favorite matches of the book, you know, and of all of this sort of collection. And I think if I had to say my favorite, it probably would be just what you said, that Kingston Punk match. And especially like the backstory and you know, bringing it back to like their days in IWA Mid-South, and the intensity of it, and the like I still think that may be Eddie Kingston's best match in AEW. Like, I love me some Eddie Kingston, and it's a hard question because I really love those Danielson matches as well. But I think that Punk one. Oh yeah.
That Punk one was awesome. I mean, that's the other thing about, I mean, that and Anarchy in Arena, right? Which is all that same era.
Yeah.
Of like, where it's, you know, the same sort of thing where it's Eddie ready to, you know, light somebody on fire, you know, against these guys, who, this whole group of guys, right? Claudio and Punk and Daniels. They did a lot of like these guys who Eddie doesn't like. And I don't think he likes. I mean, I think that's the thing. I think, you know, Eddie is, I, you know, you can never really tell with Eddie Kingston, but I know Eddie, I talked to Eddie a lot, you know, to have him on the podcast. I've talked to him for Ringer articles. I talked to him for the book. I don't think he likes CM Punk, and I don't think he liked him. And I think that it was somewhat difficult for them to get that match done. And that's probably the reason it only ever happened once. But that was all like, I don't think Eddie does. I think a lot of times he doesn't fucking like the fact that Claudio still probably doesn't like the fact that Claudio Castagnoli didn't put him over in Chikara like he was supposed to and left the promotion before doing that. And I don't think that still pisses him off. And that's one of the great things about Nikki. It's like, ah, that guy, you know, there's some real underlying dislike in a lot of these matches he's had with these people. And he kind of feels, you kind of feel that, right?
Absolutely. That's like the magic of it, really, for me. Yeah. So where you sort of blend that, you know, that thing of it's that real suspension of disbelief for me, like as a viewer. You know, you watch it and you just fall into the full magic of it. And I think it's because there's an actual palpable hate in the air, and that's hard to recreate if guys are just buds, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I'm, you know, become pretty friendly, you know, we're friendly with here Chris Hero and Brian Danielson, because they were, you know, over the course of doing these Dean shows. And I almost feel like, you know, man, should I not be fucking friendly with these guys? But like, those guys are both really nice guys. I really enjoy chatting with both of them. Like, I was like, man, should I just tell these guys to go fuck themselves out of respect? Out of like a responsibility for my buddy Eddie here? What is going on? Where's my loyalty? Where should my loyalties lie? Oh yeah, Chris did some of the agent stuff for Dean 2 and is doing it for Dean 3 too. I'm like, pals with this guy now. Where I'm from, it's like if your buddy hates a guy, you fucking hate him too. You've got nothing against him. So I don't know. I'm growing as a person. So I'm like, I'm going to go ahead and not try to hold grudges against anybody anymore.
I love it. That hero Eddie match, IW Mid South in the original book, one of my favorite matches. Speaking of ones to rewatch, like because I too was a bit of a IW Mid South fan back in the day and the Ted Petty Invitational and everything, but yeah, rewatching that one with current eyes just went so hard.
Yeah, and we talked a lot. We had him on Way of the Blade. I had Eddie on Way of the Blade Pod, and we talked about a lot about that feud with Hero. And just like those were live rounds for a reason. I never talked to Chris about it. I'll have to see if I get to chat with him about it at some point too. I've been trying to get him on the pod for like 4 years. I like what if you can feel like they're. There's some real ugliness behind what's going on here. Always makes better wrestling, right? Even if who knows how much of that stuff is truth or fiction. That's the great thing about, I think, Eddie as a wrestler and a character is like you believe him.
Yes.
And, you know, do I know for sure? Maybe he's got no beef with those guys at all anymore, but, you know, doesn't kind of believe that he does.
Right? Like, yeah. I want to believe.
Want to believe, so long-term goals is like, I gotta get, convinced I want to run Hero Kingston at Dean 6 or something like that. I gotta convince Hero to get him, put his trunks on. I gotta convince Eddie to love all these. I have long-term plans and schemes, whether any of those long-term plans and schemes will ever come out, but I got them, for this project. You know, we're only guaranteed one more. Maybe they'll only have more, but you know, if anybody's in Philadelphia and wants to stop by on September 6th and check out, we've got two things for sure we're doing.
Caballera contra Caballera.
We're doing that, you know, Demon. I cannot imagine. I don't see under any circumstances how that could possibly not be incredible. Like yes. with how hard those guys go, and I think, I haven't talked to Demas that much about it, but I know, talked to Mad Dog, and he's sort of, looking at this as, a chance, a real, like, an opportunity for him to really, like, have a moment at the ECW arena the way, there's been moments in that arena. I think he sort of visualizes this as a, part of that continuum of Funk and Sabu and Sandman and Raven and Necro Butcher and Samoa Joe and all of the things that have happened in the Loki and Homicide, all things have happened in that arena over the years. And, I think he sees this as like, all right, I can put one more fucking, banner in the ceiling here for this. And, I don't, the Covenant of the Goat and the Gypsy Joe Invitational, that should be really cool. We'll see how that turns out. Got some so ideas, but, and then we got some guys who are going to definitely be on the show and we'll be in matches, right? So I know there's a lot of TBD still. I mean, one of the disadvantages of working with somebody else is there's a lot more coordination that needs to become. There are a lot of advantages, like me not losing a lot of money and all the I don't think I couldn't have booked fucking Blue Panther and Virus and Shawa and all these guys that worked like the Cybernetico D2 if it was just me and Eric and Matt Griffin, emptying out our couch cushions looking for money to book people. So we get the opportunity to do, I think and we'll see how it shakes out, but at least now we're planning to have more guys from CMLL come back for Dean 3 who and in what you know, organization, what order and who they're against, that's still TBD. But you know, and then, you know, we got guys who are common, you know. Manders is common, Adam Priest will be there, you know, like the Dean guys.
Excellent.
Who are on the first two shows are gonna be on this show too and doing something. What they're doing. Yeah, we'll see.
So pumped, man. I'll definitely be watching that one from across the pond whenever it gets posted to YouTube or whatever. But yeah, I feel like half of the time it's like the stuff you tell me that just comes together last minute, or a guy we didn't even expect we're going to get. And then it's just, that's just one of the real magical things. So I'm real excited to see how it just happens to shape up.
And we'll do another one, at least one more, whether it's with AEW or just back to the pure indie grind of it. I think we caught the bug at least enough to you know, keep going at least one more past this one at some point. You know, and then who knows? I guess it's, you know, the future's promised to no one. We're gonna keep doing this. Like we're gonna keep doing books. I'm gonna keep doing shows. I mean, I get you know, my wife gets very into like projects and hobbies for like 6 hard months, and then they kind of disappear. Whereas I just like be like, all right, I like this thing, and I'll just keep doing it forever. Oh, pro wrestling! I liked pro wrestling when I was 11, and now it's, you know, 30, you know, 7 years later, and it's like, all right, I got this book project and this fucking show I'm putting on, and now I'm gonna throw on something on my TV real quick for the last hour, and you know, so I don't I kind of keep my interests for long.
Preaching to the choir, man. My partner's the same, like gone through like different pottery things or crocheting or whatever, and I'm just like, man, I have made professional wrestling like my entire life and I just keep making it more of it, like, but it's fun. We love what we love.
Yeah, exactly. And we're not doing cool stuff with it, right? And that's the other thing, right? If you're gonna go ahead and get into something like this, you might as well try to do the most interesting shit you can do about it, rather than just, you know, argue with people on Twitter about how many people this company drew or what these, right, that kind of shit. It's like, who gives a fuck? Yeah. Look, here's a cool book. 1,000 people will read this book and be like, oh, this book's pretty awesome. You know, hopefully 1,000 people will read the next one, and you know, and I somehow got Yahoo to pay me to write an article about Gypsy Joe. So, you know, we got to put on 2 shows. I had to put on 3 wrestling shows. I mean, I can't. You at some point probably went through a fucking light tubes when you were a little young. I mean, we how can we lose, right? Like at this point, we've already won. Everything else is just a victory lap.
Exactly. These are all things to celebrate, I think. Yeah. I never take it for granted getting to be involved in these weird projects and you know, the idea of just getting, like, to say that with a lot of these things, actually getting some sort of financial compensation for them is just a wild, like, little treat, you know? I just, honestly, so much of this stuff, I just get so much joy.
We might buy us dinner.
Yeah.
Right? So that's fine.
Yeah, it'll pay the coffee and beer bill at my place.
Yeah, it's gonna, whatever money you make for this book will cover Zach's cello rental. He's gonna do an orchestra this year, so that's cool. Put that on the cello rental card. Put some of this money away to lose on Dean 4 if we get back out into the indie world.
That's what I want to hear. That's what I want to hear.
Dr. Cerebro's plane ticket.
Man, I really want to hammer home for people. So first of all, if you're in the Philly area, be bloody sure to get along to that Dean 3 show with the Collision taping.
Low ticket. It's going to sell out for sure. So, and so if you're, you know, on the fence, get off the fence, because you don't want to decide to go and not be able to go. I think it's going to sell out. I mean, I'm not saying that we're the reason it's going to sell out, but it will sell out. So that's, pick that up. And then I think I don't know exactly the plan for airing it. I imagine it will air similarly on ROH's YouTube channel, you know, a couple days later is how I think it's going to go. Awesome. But whatever, it'll air somewhere. We'll figure out a way so that people can watch it outside of just who are in the building, for sure.
Yeah, I'm so intrigued to just see it in that venue, you know, like you're saying, so much of an emotional, sentimental place of ECW Arena in a lot of people's hearts. And it might look a little bit different. The bathroom might be a bit nicer now, but it's still got the same, you know, like concrete floor.
Yeah, I mean, I was really trying to think back. I may have only ever been to the ECW Arena once, which is weird because I certainly went to a lot of wrestling shows in Philadelphia over the years, but a lot of those were like ROH shows. I didn't make it to an ECW show at ECW. I showed her that's a mistake that I didn't just take a bus there. I was in college. I could have done it relatively easily, but whatever. But I saw a Chikara King of Trios there, but I don't know for sure that I've ever been, that I've seen any other shows there. I was trying to think back. I don't think maybe I saw an ROH show there once. ROH at World ECW Arena, they must have, right?
Yeah, I mean, they had a few shows. They had that awesome Danielson match with Alex Shelley, the world title match there. And then they had a lot of the HD net tapings there back in the day.
I was done by then. So maybe just the Chikara King of Trios, the one with Johnny Saint. I may have just gone to see Johnny Saint.
Heck of a show to go to.
Yeah, it was a good one. Yeah, that sort of Jigsaw, Kota Ibushi, one of the Young Bucks, and El Generico four-way that I think was a match that people really, really got into.
Yeah.
But yes, I personally don't have a huge ECW Arena history, so it'll be cool to, you know, do my own thing there, but it's not like that's, I know there's some people who are probably going to go to the show, you know, been to dozens and dozens of shows over the years. For the life of me, can only think about one.
Yeah.
I don't have as good a memory about this shit as I used to, so it's certainly possible that I'm obviously forgetting something huge and memorable and important.
I've never actually been to a show there, but I've been outside the ECW Arena. When I went to Philly once, I made a special point to go down and get one of the John's roast pork, and in the South Philly area, the Philly cheesesteak that I reckon is my favorite Philly cheesesteak. And yeah, I made sure to do a little walk around the building, but maybe one day in the future I'll make it there, but I'm very excited that we've got a Dean show happening there, and yeah, I can't wait to check it out, man. But I also want to make sure to tell everyone, get this book. You know, I've been like promoting this thing on the podcast for a little while, and at the moment I'm really feeling like it's you know, we got a little bit of coverage sort of in the early part. There was some cool articles, and there was the awesome article that you did with the excerpt of the Danielson interview, which I highly recommend everyone checking out if they want a little taster of the book. But exactly like you're saying about like these, I feel like the interviews with Moxley, it's some of those matches are just some amazing stuff that people are really sleeping on right now. And the book in general. So I'm really telling people, if you like AEW, if you like these early years of AEW, if you like bloody wrestling matches, if you dug the original Way of the Blade, check out the book. I think you'd really get a kick out of it. And I, like, honestly, hand on heart, I'm really proud of the work that we did with it, man. Like, I think I really enjoyed collaborating with yourself, with Jonathan on the whole project. Like, I can't tell you how excited I was when I originally would get like the match lists and go through what was going to be included. And then, like I said, going through and rewatching these matches and doing the still frames and screen grabs and like frame by frame, trying to find the right reference picture of it. It was a lot of work, but it was a big time labor of love. So I guess I more than anything, just wanted to say thank you, man, for letting me be part of it.
I love doing it with you. And, you know, like I said, we're going to keep doing projects together until we're both old and gray. You know, that's my plan. And, you know, yeah, the book hasn't sold. There are a lot of people who bought the first Way of the Blade who haven't bought this one yet. So I can't imagine if you bought the first Way of the Blade and thought it was cool and enjoyed it, that you wouldn't also think this was cool and enjoy it, right? Like, obviously it doesn't have the, you know, so you're not going to get matches from the 1970s and matches from, you know, in Mexican junkyards in this one. It really is more just a television product, but I think the same art is really great. The writing is really great. And the interviews, I think, were, you know, I thought some really, really cool guy. You know, you really got those guys dug in and really talked about their careers and talked about, you know, the way they view wrestling and think about it in a way that I don't really know. I've never heard, seen a lot of these guys go this deep in any other format. Right. So this is good stuff. And I think that, you know, we want to keep doing more of these books, and, you know, we got, it's kind of sell okay for us to, for that to be an easier thing to get greenlit, right? Like, you know, if this sells good, then it'll be a lot easier for us to convince, you know, Hybrid Chute to let us do Way of the Blade 3. We'll probably do it anyway, but, you know, it'll be easier to convince them to do it if this sells better. So if you're like, you know, you're on the fence or something like that, pick it up, and we, you know, really help us out and help out the project of trying to like do interesting, cool shit, you know, and that's for Margins of Pro Wrestling, which is kind of been my project since I was 20 years old and wrote on in Death Valley Driver 3. You know what I mean? That's always been the thing. It's like, you know, we want to try to do cool things outside of the mainstream, outside of the way things are traditionally done, and open people's eyes up to cool things they didn't know about. And, you know, that's the great thing about, like I said, pro wrestling, is that as much as I've watched over my life, and, you know, you can still all of a sudden realize that fucking Sanker Shikata heavy metal from a triple mania was incredible shit, and I've never seen it before or ever heard anybody even talk about it before. You know, and that we'll keep doing that. You'll have to watch that, Chris. That's on the list. That's added to that got added to the spreadsheet. So, you know,
fantastic.
You have a picture of Sagre Chikata hanging heavy metal over a balcony, heavy metal over a balcony while his fucking blood flowing out of the top of his head.
That sounds fun as shit. Oh man, I must say as well, I listened to the emergency podcast that you did with Matt about the chain dog collar incredible match between Roddy Piper and Buzz Sawyer, and I can't tell you how much I love that match, and I love just hearing you guys nerd out about it. And even if you did repeat some stuff of previous conversations, I still thought it was wonderful.
I haven't done this bit before. You do enough podcasts. How many times have you heard, as Mark Maron told you about his SNL audition, right? Sometimes you're going to get some shit gets repeated. Sorry, it's not going to work.
Oh man, I'm the worst for it. This brain, I'm just like, if I've said stuff before in the previous conversation to someone, I'm sorry. It's just, you know, front of mind, whatever.
But yeah, no, that got added to the spreadsheet too.
Oh, I need
the vault to continue to find me shit for the spreadsheet.
Yes, please. Man, yes. I highly recommend that match to everyone if you haven't seen it. I just honestly, I think it's the greatest dog collar match of all time. Piper, I enjoyed everything about it.
Piper Buzz is the best one. Wow.
I thought so. Yeah, yeah.
It's really fucking good.
I mean, I have a lot of love for the Valentine, you know, one of course. That previously I think might have had that spot for me, and obviously the Briscoes, you know, tag variation was also just mind blowing. But there was something about this one, like right down that finishing stretch, that I adored, of Buzz just being a complete wild animal, gorilla man, just writhing, and Piper being so defiant, and just, I thought that the finish was one of the greatest finishes I've ever seen. And further to what you guys said on the podcast, it's just insane to me that they had so many of the real prototype, archetype kind of spots of the dog collar match down that early. Like, yeah. Did you say this is his first ever one?
For both guys.
Yeah. Crazy.
I think there were dog collar matches before, earlier in history, but that was the first Piper one and the first Buzz Sawyer one. Buzz Sawyer didn't have that many. I mean, that was the thing. You think of him as a dog collar wrestler. I think he had 8 in his whole career. I mean, maybe he had some that didn't make cage match, but you know, eight. You know, Mad Dog Kiley is 8 a month. You know what I mean? Like during this phone conversation we've had, he's had 3 dog collar matches while we've been on the podcast with each other. I would put Demas Mad Dog Connolly on that list.
Yes,
in that
absolutely.
Tier. But of course, it's hard for me to remain objective about that at all, right? Like, it's like, you know, think of, you know, it's like, who are currently the best singers? Well, you know, I still really love Bruce Springsteen. And then, of course, my son Zach's really good. You know, it's like, how do you like him? I can't be fucking checked. That's my, that birthed out of my brain and then somehow ended up happening. So, but I think that's up there for, in the sort of top, you know, in that A tier with the tag match with Piper Valentine, with Piper Buzz, and you know, that's up there. I did the best dog collar matches list for the Ringer, and
then so many great ones have happened after, right?
Since, or unearthed since, right? Where it's like, oh man, I really, how did I not pick this? How did I not have this one on there? Oh, I guess it didn't happen yet, or we didn't know about it. But yeah, that would be really high on that list for sure, especially because the tag match hadn't happened yet and the Demas match hadn't happened yet.
Yeah, but that kind of thing, I think I've changed my way of thinking about like greatest things ever from being like this, like, all right, it's just a fact, this is the greatest, you know, dog collar match has ever happened, as opposed to like the one that I personally got the most enjoyment from watching. And when you can look at it that way, I'm like, 100%, you know, you were there. You experienced this like incredible Demas Mad Dog Connolly match from like feet away, you know, like, of course that would, you know, hit in a different way than, you know, watching, you know, some older questionable footage of a match or something that you have less of a personal connection to.
Yeah, but I think something about Piper Sawyer, too, it being a thing we didn't have and then had.
Yes,
right? Like, it's such something about that, too, where it's just like, where it's like all of a sudden you find out on Monday that on Thursday you're going to see a fucking Piper, Roddy Piper, Buzz Sawyer blog collar match? That, where that's going to be on my fucking YouTube in 3 days, this thing that happened, you know, 40 years ago, and all of a sudden we're just getting to watch it, and you never think, you know, no reason to think you ever would get to watch it, and you know, for some reason you thought it was a cage match up until like 3 days before it happened.
I was about to say
listed wrong on the cage match for however many years. I'm like, so you know, that was part, I think, really something too, where it wasn't like this thing, well, I got around to this canonical match people have been talking about for a long time, and I didn't watch it and had this opinion about it, but it was more just like, it didn't exist, and then it did, right? And, I mean, even we were talking about that, like that. Do you watch the Savage Lawler
match? I haven't watched it yet, but I'm very stoked to.
Really, really good. And that's another thing where it's like, well, I didn't even, not only, I mean, we knew that Piper and Sawyer had a dog collar match in Atlanta on the Omni that theoretically might be in the vault, and someday we might see it. This thing, it was just like, did anybody have any idea? It's like a house show Waller Savage match. It was like
from
30
like
minutes.
ICW, right?
Well, I think it was unclear. I think it was from the ICW archives, but I think it was a Memphis match. I mean, it's on, you don't know. I don't, who the fuck knows? But yeah, I mean, that's
like Wyoming or something.
No. Where was it? It was in Missouri, maybe.
Yeah.
It was like in an ICW town.
Hmm.
So it's a pretty interesting match because they the first like 15 minutes are all just shtick because it was an ICW town that, and Savage was the heel, but had a lot of support because he was, you know, it was human. He was an ICW, so they spent a lot of the first couple part of the match really turning the crown on Savage with a lot of like Tux Newman stuff and a lot of like Savage bailing out, not, you know, talking on the microphone like a 10 minutes of great Memphis horse shit before they actually started fighting.
Fantastic.
Because they had to basically make sure that the crowd, you know, got the reaction they wanted from the crowd, which is cheering Lawler and booing Savage, and then they did, and then they had like it was like, you know, 14 minutes of bullshit, and then another like 13 minutes of Randy Savage and Jerry Lawler beating the shit out of each other in glorious ways. But that's even, that was just, like, more incredible, because I was like, I don't know this existed and had no idea it existed on tape and no expectation that you ever get to watch it. And here it is. Like, that was the other thing. It's like, you know, there's all a lot of that Lawler stuff. It's like, I don't, nobody even knows who fucking owns it. Nobody really even knows what's out, whether there is copies of a lot of these matches.
I mean, the amount of times that the Memphis Library was, like, sold in different questionably, you know, legal ways, like, who knows?
And you don't know whether it's like, is there stuff that exists that isn't out there, or are they just selling the stuff again that we knew we had, right? Like, I don't know if there is, you know, is there a full copy of the Texas Deathmatch around? Maybe not, right? That just might not have ever been taped, and, you know, so you're never going to see it. You know, whereas, like, you actually do know there's probably a lot more Omni stuff that is actually taped and does exist, or you know, the way that you just know there's a lot more Houston stuff that is taped and does exist and is caught tied up in the thing. And, you know, my friend Rob Bahari was down in Knucklepond, and apparently there's like a giant closet of Arena Knucklepond stuff going back to the early 80s.
Wow.
It just exists in a closet. So if I ever, like he said, that they just pulled something out and just showed him, it was like a rookie year Foligno match, like 84 or something. It's like, oh my God.
Man.
So at some point I might have to, you know, so if I ever win the lottery, I'm sending Bahari down with $25,000 in a suitcase and say, go get the knuckle pod stuff out of this guy's closet. Here you go. Here's the money. Go buy this for Bubba. You know, I got a whisper in Tony Khan's ear. You know, you could probably convince HBO Max to put on a show of just Arena Knucklepod footage for me. Wouldn't it be cool if you bought the futon from Daisuke Ikeda?
More Yuki Ishikawa for the masses, please. Yeah. Oh boy, man. It's an excellent time to be a fan of this rarities. I feel like we're seeing more stuff unearthed than, you know, has in a long time. So for someone like me that's a big time nerd for it, it's a happy time. But yeah, I can't wait to see if we whatever next Omni, you know, shows we get, fingers crossed.
Seriously, cross your toes too.
Yeah.
Okay, so everybody come to Philly, watch Dean 2. And if you don't, come watch Dean 3 on when it shows up on ROH YouTube. If you have not watched Dean 1 or Dean 2, Dean 1 is available on IWTV. A fair amount of it is now on YouTube. We put up a bunch of it on a bunch of the top matches on YouTube to sort of hype Dean 2. Dean 2 is on the ROH YouTube channel, available to watch for free. And check it out. Dean 3 will be available to watch in some form after it happens, either ROH YouTube channel or on Honor Club or something.
Everybody watch it. Get those views up. You know, I feel like it's a good thing. You know, the more views we can get on these shows. Honestly, that Dean 2 matches you have to see. The big Cibernetico, and of course the dog collar with Priest and Connolly, just an insanely fun little story they tell in like, what was it, 11-12 minutes. It was awesome. I really enjoyed it, and I think a lot of y'all would too. But yeah, I think if we can get more eyeballs on this stuff, it's going to bode well, you know, for future things. And I'll say the same thing about the new Way of the Blade book. Even if you already have the Way of the Blade AEW edition of the book, you know, if you can jump on Amazon and leave some reviews, I think that is you know, really, really helpful for the algorithm and all that kind of stuff, and get it in front of a few more eyeballs. But yeah, guys, I just want to say a massive thank you to all the support for everyone who already has gotten it. But if you do have a pal that, you know, loves the AEW and loves some bloody wrestling, give it a recommendation.
It's a good gift. I know people have gotten it gotten the other books for Christmas or Father's Day or something like that, giving them gifts away. That's always really cool to see. And yeah, if you like the book, write a review. It always really touches me when people say they enjoy what we do. So I really, I read all that stuff and, always love when people like on Twitter post a picture of them getting the book. And it's always like, I can't believe that anybody's interested in the stuff that I do. So I really,
so nice.
Yeah. It's really is a blessing to get to do stuff like that and get to, get people's eyes on it. And always fun talking to you. I think I'm going to hopefully have a new Way of the Blade, colon the canon, colon the deathmatch canon, yes. Maybe next week. And I'm going to be on behind the David and Chris's Behind the Sheets, Between the Sheets. What is that podcast? I'm going to be on that next week, too.
Between the Sheets,
yeah. So I'll be on that next week, too. Making the rounds. I'm trying to get the book out in front of people's eyes, get the shows hyped, and get the articles on that. And if folks, I've written some, I don't know if people know this, I've written some very cool stuff for Yahoo over the last 4 months.
Yes.
So you can just search my name on Yahoo. But I've written a great
thing. Recommendation on the Gypsy Joe one. Such a good article.
Read that and get excited for the Gypsy Joe Invitational at Dean 3. And then I really had fun doing the ECW What If thing I did with Paul Heyman, where he talked about how he wanted to put the ECW world title on Frank Shamrock, which is something I'd never heard before. And it was a pretty crazy story.
That blew my mind. I was a big-time Frank Shamrock fan from those sort of Strikeforce days. I was like watching a bunch of those Strikeforce shows with like him and Kung Lee.
This would have been before that, right? This would have been like a couple of years. This would have been not so far removed from when he went like 8-0 in the UFC, but the UFC couldn't pay anybody and he just kind of left. And so this would have been like right after that, even before Strikeforce. But apparently Tammy Sitch skunked the deal. That's what Heyman said. I don't know if that's true, but I texted Frank Shamrock, but he never texted me back. So I just go with the one source on the article.
Man, I always thought, like, from that pancreas stuff, like, Frank Shamrock, the one dude just so tailor-made for professional wrestling. It just feels like we were robbed that we never got a proper run of him in the professional wrestling world.
And also, how crazy would it have been if ECW had basically turned briefly into UWFI, right? How you would have had, like, because, Taz was doing some of that stuff, but never...
Yeah, he was the shooter.
But he never had, like a antagonist, right? It was always him. They never had another guy who was doing a similar thing, really, right? I mean, they had beat up Paul Varlins, but that's not really what we're talking about here, right? We're talking about like a real rival in that style that never really manifested itself, right? It was always kind of style clash stuff. I mean, Bigelow, Sabu or Shane Douglas or whatever, but you never saw you never really saw what would Taz do if he was working a shoot style match, and what would have like a Taz Frank Shamrock where it's like here's a Sandman match, here's a Raven match, here's a Shane Douglas match, and now here is this rings match on the main event of a fucking ECW show. Would have been wild.
And what I would have done for like Taz and Backlund or someone
maybe then they bring in Ogawa or something like that if this was successful, right? Who knows what that could have turned into, right?
What could have been man, everyone give that a read. I always love all of your writing, Phil, and it obviously brings me a lot of joy to get to nerd out with you on all these things, and it was just super cool for us to talk about the book, and I think that was a good part of our life for quite a while there, so it was nice to get to officially chop it up with you about it.
Okay. And more to come.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much, Phil. Everyone check out Phil at Yahoo. Everyone check out the next Action Dean show. And thanks so much, man.
Always a pleasure, Chris. Always love talking to you.
All right, there it is. Thank you so much, Phil. Man, that was so bloody nice. I don't need to tell everyone how, you know, cool it is for me to get to work with Phil after looking up to him for so many years, and him being such a massive part of my expanding wrestling nerddom brain and obscure loves and of all the different types of weird wrestling out there. So thank you, Phil. I forgot in the intro to do my World of Chris Things thing, little update and what I've been having going on. I was talking all about the book. I mean, that's mainly what this thing is about. But I did want to say a big thank you to all of the lovely people that I got to meet and chat with at Lucha Fantastica Melbourne this past weekend. I had a big old week. I flew down to Melbourne, which is like a 2.5 hour flight. I got into Melbourne on the Thursday and got to spend a little bit of time with Cousin Ben, for those followers of the show who might recall Ben coming on from time to time for us to chop it up. We'll have to have him again on the show sometime soon. But yeah, it was nice to just spend some quality time there. And then I had a big show at Collingwood Town Hall, and I am always so stoked to be a part of Lucha Fantastica. I mean, I don't know if I'm a part. I've got my art table there, you know. So I guess in a sense I'm a part of it, you know. But the main thing is Señor Fantastico and Paulina do just an absolutely amazing job in putting this experience together, this celebration of Mexican culture, of Lucha Libre within Australia. You know, it's the coolest thing. It is such a fun party atmosphere. I get to meet so many cool and interesting people through this and you know, get to have chats about my art, and it just makes me so happy to get to do. I remember specifically I had a wonderful chat with a dude who I believe he resides in America, or North America, perhaps Canada, I'm not sure, but he was telling me about the mystery wrestling show that he was at recently. I guess kind of like the evolution of the PWG Mystery Vortex thing. I think like Evil Uno is in charge of that. But it's just such a wild world out there, where a dude could be on the other side of the world experiencing that show, and then I bump into him at Lucha Fantastica. It was such a treat. And yeah, for everyone out there who might be listening, who I got to have a chat with you, that was just such a good night. Both at the nighttime show and the daytime family show, it was such an awesome time. So that made me very happy. And then I flew back to Brisbane on the Sunday morning, got to catch up with some mates and watch the end of this year's G1, which I need to say that. So there was some amazing stuff in this G1, but I would not say this was one of the best G1s in terms of its conclusion. I don't think that is necessarily a hot take. Sorry for anyone out there who might think I'm a hater. This was just not my cup of tea. But I will say I do think that Evil is a very underrated wrestler, and he's extremely talented when we actually get to see him wrestling. So I'll put that out there. So I don't know, we might have some G1 things to look forward to for the next week's match of the week. We'll see. Don't want to spoil things there. But yeah, then now back into it. All of the commission things. So I love getting to make stuff, guys. You know, as a wrestling artist, getting to actually make things. Sadly, in doing this as a full-time job, it's not all that. You know, you spend a lot of time doing a bunch of other stuff. bookkeeping for a lot of this week and doing lame accounting things and all that kind of stuff. But end of the day, I love making stuff, and I love making stuff for people and for people who are passionate about things and for people that are passionate about wrestling especially. My gosh. So I'm really stoked to be able to be getting back into that. I also have, in addition to the AEW Way of the Blade book, I am just in the final process of getting the new Connections in Joshi book, lined up. I've finished my illustrations for that one. Just want to say a massive shout out to Dan Ball, who has put this whole thing together. It's his baby, his passion project, and such a wonderful level of enthusiasm for Joshi wrestling. Celebrating the wrestling on the fringes is what I'm all about, and this is to me exactly that. And I'm so stoked to have my illustrations a part of that book, to also have worked with Shining Wizard Designs on the book. I'm so excited, and I'm going to keep shouting it out till we have the details of the pre-orders and such. But I just got some little things printed up for that, and it was really cool seeing that the tactile illustration of the prints of the illustrations here, in person, to hold them in your hands. It's a pretty cool kind of thing. So I'm stoked on that. I'm stoked to be able to share it with you all. Other than that, I guess I've got a few things on the boil of some different commission things that I'm working on for the next little bit. I also want to let you guys know, as we start to get near the pointy end of the year, if you would like some sort of Chris Things commission piece, be that an artwork of your own, be that a gift, be that something for a business or some sort of illustration for a passion project or whatever it might be, I'd love to do that for you all. If you'd like to swing me a message, we can talk about timelines, see when it'll work to get it locked in the books, in the calendar. Since I'm such an official, organized person now. I love doing these things. So if you'd like to collaborate on such a thing, swing me a message. I'll let you know what we're looking at price-wise. But most of these commission things generally start around about the 150 mark. Depending on level of complexity, we'll see how we go. Anyway, I think that brings us to the end of today's episode. We've had a couple chunky ones here, but episodes of this podcast that I'm very proud of. Still blows me away that people voluntarily listen to this show, to my rambling nonsense, but it makes me very happy. I'm happy to be able to share my life and my journey with you guys. That's kind of what this thing has become. This bit of the podcast I'm doing right now, it's kind of my personal journal. I kind of get to, reflectively kind of like line up my thoughts a little bit. It's nice. It's nice for me to be able to do, and I hope that it, brings some interesting something or other to anyone who voluntarily listens to it. But if I want to say a big thank you to all the listeners out there. I want to say a big thank you to all the supporters out there, everyone who says a nice word or shares something on Instagram, Chris Things on Instagram, by the way, or people who frequent christhings.com.au, my web store, my website, a whole bunch of things on there, a bunch of illustrations, a bunch of paintings. You can get all your fancy art prints on there. On that note, I am hearing that, unfortunately, I think some tariffs are going to come into play with certain things that I send over to America. I'm not sure exactly what that is going to impact in terms of my prints or mainly like original art, paintings. But I'll keep you guys posted on it as far as I know. But I do know that whatever this big change is, it's going to be happening at the end of the month. So if you would like to order something of mine, it might be a good idea to get it in before then. Just an FYI, just in case any of y'all might have been thinking about a purchase, might be a good time to get it in before the 29th of August, I'm hearing. But anyway, thank you everyone for all of that. Thank you, Social Suplex, socialsuplex.com, the home of this podcast and a variety of other fun wrestling podcasts out there, from One Nation Radio to Keeping It Strong Style, to Imps WWE Adventure, to the AEW Match Recommendation podcast, All Things Elite. We've got the Trish and Sarah podcast. We've got Tunnel Talk. We've got all the things. So shout out to Social Suplex. And yeah, thank you to everybody for joining me on this journey. I hope you have an excellent week. And I will see you next week with, I'm assuming, another Match of the Week podcast. We'll see how we go. And that's it. Enjoy. Bye.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.